What's up? Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of Drop Balls Podcast, your favorite podcaster's favorite sports podcast. Yes, you heard me right. I said your favorite podcaster's favorite sports podcast. Hope y'all are having a good week so far. Hope y'all were able to enjoy Super Wild Card Weekend and enjoy the game on Super Wild Card Monday. It was some dope stuff this past weekend. We had some blowouts this past weekend and some things that I really did not expect this past weekend. But we're going to recap that on this episode. We're also going to discuss my picks for this coming weekend. And I hope y'all are ready for some playoff football. I hope y'all are ready because we got some really good games this weekend. But before we get into all of that, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please go down to the comments and review section, or I guess the rating and review section, and leave your boy a 5-star rating and leave your boy a comment. Let me know what you like, what you dislike, what you want to hear more of, what you didn't like hearing of or hearing about and all of that. Also, if you listen on Spotify, Spotify has added a review section. So please go ahead and rate your boy on Spotify as well, so that way we can get this podcast out to more ears. And no matter what podcast platform you're listening on, please share this podcast with your friends, your family, your coworkers, anybody that you know that loves sports just as much as you and I do. Go ahead and share it. The more ears we get on it, the better it'll be. The better it will be. But also, we also have some Drop Balls Podcast merch. So click that link to bonfire.com down in the description, and it will take you over to the Drop Balls Podcast merch. Show your boy some support. We got hoodies. We got T-shirts, long-sleeve tees, short-sleeve tees, women's tees, all of that. So go ahead and click that link and show your boy some support on bonfire.com. And also, go support your boy on YouTube. I have been dropping some more videos, so I'm going to get more consistent with that. The link to the YouTube channel is down in the description, so please go ahead and support your boy on that as well. And, you know, let's get into it. Let's get into it. But on Twitter, I asked, you know, for people to, because you all know I have that segment, You Got Questions, I Got Answers. And I asked for you all to give me some questions for this week, for this week's episode. And man, y'all came through for your boy. Y'all gave me some really good questions. So we're going to start with that segment today. We're going to just start the episode off with that. And then we're going to get into everything else. But I thought these were some really good questions. Y'all really hooked your boy up. So I hope you all continue to keep the questions coming every week. But anyway, let's get into it. So my homeboy Eric, went to school with him. We played college football together. He goes by Epic Dead Bird TTV on Twitter. So let's get into his question. So he asked me, how much do you think Henry is used or used as a decoy? So that was his first question. And, you know, he's talking about Derrick Henry. He's a Tennessee Titans fan, and we all know they play the Cincinnati Bengals this weekend. So I think Henry's going to be used not a lot, but I think with the addition of Foreman and how Foreman had been playing since Henry got hurt, I don't think Henry's going to be used as a decoy, but I definitely think he's going to be used in the run game, of course. But they're not going to give him the ball 30 times a game. It's going to be, they're going to ease him into the games, get him back into game shape, but they're also going to use Foreman. So because you have great value Derrick Henry back there, which no disrespect to Foreman, because Foreman balled out when Derrick Henry got hurt and he got picked up. He balled out. So there's no disrespect to him, but I'm just saying the way he runs, it reminds you of Derrick Henry, but it's not quite Derrick Henry. So that's why I said a great value Derrick Henry. But, you know, with him being back there and the way he's been playing, I think they have a great combination with backs with a 1-2 punch, that just backs that are going to tie your defense out the whole game. So I don't think they use Henry as a decoy, but I do think he gets some snaps. He'll probably see about 15 to maybe 18 carries. That's where I think he'll be at, 15 to 18 carries. And then you'll see Foreman probably get about 10 carries this game, 10 to 12. So I think it'll be pretty, you know, pretty close in the running game department between those two running backs. Then he asked me, can Buffalo repeat what they did against the Patriots against a better Kansas City team? I think they can repeat it. So especially offensively. Now defensively, they're going to have a lot more issues defensively than they did against the Patriots, just because it's the Kansas City Chiefs. It's Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. So they're going to have a harder time on defense. But offensively, I think they can take advantage of Kansas City. Kansas City loves to run man to man. They blitz on running downs. And they do all of that. So I think offensively, Josh Allen and that offense can get going. And I think they can still put up 40 points, but I think that Kansas City will also probably be able to put up 40 points as well. I don't think defensively Kansas City has the dogs that can run with that offense with Josh Allen in them. But I also feel the same way about Buffalo's defense against Patrick Mahomes and them. But the thing about Buffalo's defense, they are a better defense than what Patrick Mahomes and them faced against the Steelers. And the Patriots defense is better than the defense that the Buffalo Bills are going to face this week. So I think they can repeat, but I think they will have to score a lot to win this game. They didn't have to score a lot to beat the Patriots. They were just able to do it. It was just that easy. But and so I think they'll be able to score a lot against Kansas City, but I think Kansas City will be able to score a lot against them as well. Now, he asked me two more questions. He had two more questions up here as well. So he asked, who has the bigger game, Knox or Kelce? With the way that you have to play Kansas City, I honestly think Travis Kelce will have more yards, because with Travis Kelce, he gets his yards after catch. He's going to get his yards after catch. So you just have to tackle Travis Kelce. Now, will that happen? It's hard to get him down. Just like any of these other big tight ends, it's hard to get them down. So I think where Kansas City has the advantage is with Kelce, but where Buffalo has the advantage is with their receivers. I think their receivers will be able to eat on those DBs. I think Knox will get his, but I think Travis Kelce will have a bigger game than Dawson Knox. And now the last question he asked, does Rodgers finally get his get back in the playoffs? I will answer that question a little bit later, because when I'm giving you all my picks, I will answer that question for you all. So that way you know where I'm at as far as Aaron Rodgers moving on. All right, so the next question I got was from Kerry Wood. C Wood on Sports is the Twitter handle. He does a dope podcast called Ball About the South. But he asked me, how much blame is on Aaron Rodgers for only one Super Bowl appearance? And so Aaron Rodgers has played 13 years. And out of his 13 years, I believe he had McCarthy for maybe like nine and a half seasons. I say 13 seasons because this is his 13th season right here in 2021. But I think with Mike McCarthy, he's had him 9.5 seasons because the last year he had McCarthy and I think Philbin became the new head coach or the interim head coach after McCarthy got fired. But when I look at what McCarthy is doing right now with the Dallas Cowboys, some of the blame has to be put on Mike McCarthy. Now, I will say Aaron Rodgers last year, part of that was his fault. You know, it was his fault that they didn't make it to the Super Bowl because he didn't make enough plays. And then not only that, I think he threw like 2 or 3 interceptions in that game as well, or didn't capitalize on the interceptions that Tom Brady threw. So there was a lot of the blame to be put on Aaron Rodgers for last season and not making it to the Super Bowl. But this year, you know, he's playing with one of the best defenses he's played with his whole career. Now, I will say this, the third year with Aaron Rodgers starting was the year they won the Super Bowl. So his third year starting, they won the Super Bowl. And that was with Mike McCarthy. They had a top 5 defense. So, you know, when he has a legit defense, Aaron Rodgers will go out there and ball out and do what he needs to do. But this has been one of the best defenses he has played with in a long time. So some of that blame I will have to put on Mike McCarthy. If I'm assessing any of the blame, if I'm giving out percentages, I'll probably say 75-25. 25% on Aaron Rodgers, 75% on Mike McCarthy. Now with LaFleur, that's why I have to really kind of give Aaron Rodgers maybe 25% of the blame, because with LaFleur, you know, they've gone to the conference championship twice in 3 years, 3 seasons, they've gone to the conference championship and they've come up short. But once again, this is probably one of the best defenses that Aaron Rodgers has played with. And even when you look at last year, that defense was ranked top 10 in yards. And this year they're ranked top 10 in yards and both 13th in points allowed. But just looking at the games, when you look at it on paper, yeah, it looks like they're very similar. But when you look at the games, these defenses look completely different. So I have to go with, you know, I have to give Aaron Rodgers some of the blame, but majority of the blame I got to put on Mike McCarthy. So the next question was from Courtney Harden. He has a podcast, The Real Deal with Courtney Harden. Be sure to check it out. All of those podcasts, they're on every major podcast platform, so be sure to check them out. Courtney's Twitter handle is Courtney110979. So be sure to give everybody I mentioned, give them a follow. If y'all aren't following them on Twitter, go ahead and give them a follow. But anyway, he asked me, should the Eagles trade for Russell Wilson or stick with Jalen Hurts for one more year? To be honest, I think the Eagles should stick with Jalen Hurts. And so as the season went on, we did see Jalen Hurts progress. But we did see him in that wild card game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he didn't really look good unless he was running the ball. He was missing a lot of throws. He was missing them high, too. Like, he was missing a lot of passes high. But I think you have to roll with the guy that's on the lesser contract. And the reason I say that is because that allows you to put money elsewhere into that team. Once you start giving, you know, once you start getting these quarterbacks that have high contract values, like Russell Wilson, I mean, his ain't the highest, but he's up there right now. Once you start giving him getting quarterbacks with higher contract values, then that takes away from the other team, the rest of the team you can build around them. And now I want to say Philly's defense is pretty old. Like, you got some of those defenders are pretty old. So you got to think about replacing some of them, spending some money in free agency to get some younger players, some younger dominant players. And then you give up draft capital. Now, I know the Eagles have three first rounders. They have a 15th, a 16th, and I believe a 19th. And so then you end up giving up draft capital, which can really hurt your team when you're trying to build that team up or rebuild that team up. So I don't think you all should trade for Russell Wilson. I think that you should ride it out with Hurts, put more weapons around him, build up that defense, and try to get right back into the playoffs, make some noise in the NFC East, and try to get right back into the playoffs. Also, I'm not really a big fan of Russell Wilson. I know everybody else is, and I get it. You know, his statistics, his stats look really good, but I've had the luxury of being able to watch Russell Wilson for the past 6.5 years since I live in Seattle now, and I don't think he's worth what you would have to give up for him. He's a 30-year-old quarterback. He's coming off of an injury, which I think he'll be fine off of, because it's that finger. I mean, as you saw during the rest of the season, he looked pretty solid. But Russell Wilson is one of those quarterbacks where if you watch his games, if you watch him in the pocket, for one, he's a shorter quarterback, so he has a hard time seeing over the offensive line. And this is the thing, even with the Colts, because people are asking for us to trade for Russell Wilson and get rid of Carson Wentz. And for me, I don't see it as a major upgrade. Now, Russell Wilson would be an upgrade over Jalen Hurts. I'm not saying he's not an upgrade over Jalen Hurts. I'm just saying for the Colts, he's not a major upgrade. I don't think he moves the needle that much. Because if you watch Russell Wilson holds on to the ball a lot. He holds on to the ball too long. You have those strip sack fumbles with him. And he's not one of the quarterbacks that really takes the check down either. He prefers to throw the deep ball. Everybody says he has one of the prettiest deep balls in the NFL, but Russ loves to throw the deep ball, especially when you have Tyler Lockett, who's a pretty fast receiver and a really good pass catcher. So, you know, I mean, like I said, he's an upgrade for Jalen Hurts, but I don't think it would be the right move for the Philadelphia Eagles. I think you give Hurts some more time. If it doesn't work out, cool, but then that allows you to keep that draft capital and you can move forward to get your franchise quarterback, or you can package it up and send it out for a trade, or you can get a franchise quarterback in free agency. So, I mean, you could potentially get a franchise quarterback in free agency, but I think you stick with Jalen Hurts until that contract is done, and then you reassess at that point. Next year is his third season. Yeah, and this was really his first year starting in the NFL. So give him some time. Let him grow. He's had, he played 4 games last season and played, I believe, maybe like 16 games this season. So he's had about, 20 games under his belt. So let him continue to grow. Let him continue to progress. Let Nick Sirianni help him get right and see where things go. All right, so the next person – the next question I got was from Natasha Lawan. Her Twitter handle is Natasha Lawan on Twitter. So y'all be sure to go give her a follow as well. She's a Dallas Cowboys fan. And I'm not making a joke about it. I'm just saying she's a Dallas Cowboys fan. You know, they kind of upset right now. They kind of upset right now. But she asked me, do you think starters, the elites, are too big to be told to sit down due to injury or lack of performance, et cetera? I think, you know, I don't think they're too big for it, but I think that when you're paying an elite player, whether it's NFL, NBA, when you're paying an elite player a certain amount of money, or paying a starter a certain amount of money, then it's kind of hard for someone to tell, you know, for a coach to say sit down, especially when you have like a general manager or an owner, like, oh, no, we're paying them so much money, they better be out there on the field or on the court. Now, also the same thing, in the same breath, there's a difference between injured and hurt. If you're injured, you're probably going to need to sit down. If you're hurt, everybody's hurt at some point in time during the season, so you're going to have to get out there and play through that hurt. But if you're legit injured, then yeah, it shouldn't be a problem to sit them down. Now, even performance based, like, I mean, I don't know if this is based because of Russell Westbrook or whatever, but even performance based, if you're struggling, or if some issues are going on, then yeah, you probably need to sit on the bench and you know, and think about what's been going on. But I think there's a lot of factors that go into it on why some of these players aren't benched when they're struggling. And like I said, I think it's because you have a GM telling you, hey, this person needs to play, or you have a owner telling you that person needs to play, that player needs to play. I don't care what they're doing. We're paying them $40 million a year. They need to be on the field or on the court, and they need to be playing. So I think that's where you get some of that, where it's not necessarily they're too big. It's just that if I'm paying you all this money, your ass better be out there performing. And I think that's where some of that mindset comes in. Then Neurodivergent, he asked, his Twitter handle is Hezel McCaleb. I believe I'm saying that right. But yeah, so, or Hezzy McCaleb. Yeah, Hezzy McCaleb, my bad. But he asked me, does Dak have the intangibles to win a Super Bowl? And to be honest, I really do think Dak has what it takes to win a Super Bowl. I think he has the intangibles, but one thing I think Dak lacks is confidence. I think he's a leader. I think he has the gene. I don't know. It's hard with Dak, because as we saw with the San Francisco 49ers game, Dak, there were some throws that Dak could make, but it just seemed like he didn't trust himself to make those throws. And even during the season, there were times, and especially after the injury, after the calf injury against the Patriots, after he came back from that, there was times it didn't seem like he trusted his legs. Like, he didn't trust his legs to run from the pocket. And I don't know if that's ownership or the GM or whoever telling him he better not run the ball because they can't afford to get him injured or what it may be. But it just seems like he lacks confidence at times, where there's plays that can be made. And he can make those plays, but he just lacks the confidence to make them. But other than that, I mean, I don't see why Dak couldn't win a Super Bowl. He has the arm strength. He can run the ball. He can throw the ball with accuracy. I think he has it between the ears. You know, I'm not going to say he's a dumb quarterback. I don't think he is. I think Dak has it between the ears. And like I said, I think he can make all of the throws. It's just a matter of him having that confidence when the moments come up. And so, like I said, sometimes I just don't think he does. I think he's mentally strong. I think he can handle adversity. You know, I think he has all of those intangibles where he can lead a team to victory. And we've seen it. We've seen him down the stretch in clutch game situations. Him making throws. We saw the one against the Patriots this year where he threw the ball to CeeDee Lamb on a deep over route, and CeeDee took it in for six. Like, we've seen Dak make these plays. It's just a matter of doing it consistently and having the confidence in himself that he can make those plays. So, you know, I think he can. But that's a great question, you know. I think he can, though. So Mike Patton, my boy Mike Patton from Touring the AFC South, another great, dope podcast. He has some great guests on there all the time. Like, bruh has great guests on there all the time. But follow him on Twitter at MikePatton82. He had two questions. So he asked me, do I ever see Bol Bol becoming a solid contributor to a lineup? I don't know. I mean, Bobo, like, when you watch him play, he has some good stuff. Like, he can handle the ball, he can shoot, he can finish at the rim, and all of that. My only thing is Bobo is skinny as hell. So that's my only thing. But I don't know what it is about him that coaches, you know, they're not seeing progression. They don't think he's too frail, too fragile, or whatever, that they don't really want to put him out there on the court with some of the big dogs. I don't know what it is, but I think he could be a solid contributor. But I don't know what it is that they're seeing that we don't get to see. All I know is when I've seen him playing games, I've seen him do some stuff coming off the bench. Like, I've seen him handling the ball, I've seen him shooting, I've seen him finishing at the rim. I think I even seen him Euro step somebody. Like, I think Bobo can contribute. It's just finding the right team and finding the right fit for him. Then Mike asked me, what chances do you give the Titans to win the AFC? I think the Titans have a good chance to win the AFC. I believe I saw a stat with Julio, AJ, and Derrick Henry all healthy and on the field. Now, granted, they haven't all been on the field much together, but when they are on the field together, they're averaging about, that offense is averaging about 7 yards a play. So with that, I mean, that's a great statistic. And I think that they have a chance. They have the defense. It's just a matter of being consistent. It's a matter of what Titans team are we going to get this week. And I think that's where that comes into play. And if they can stay healthy. But if they can stay healthy, then I really can see them winning the AFC. Honestly, I got them going into the AFC championship because I believe they beat the Bengals this weekend. And I'm sorry, I gave y'all a little nugget for my pick later on. But, yeah, I think they're beating the Bengals this week. So I think they will make it to the AFC championship. But we will see. We'll definitely see. All right, I'm going to take a quick little break because, you know, we got some more questions. But when we come back, we're going to get into some more of these questions and these answers. And then, like I said, I'm going to give you all my picks for the week. We're going to recap the games from this past weekend. But, yeah, we're going to take a quick little break. Today's episode of Drop Balls Podcast is being brought to you by King's Ransom Athletic Apparel. If you're looking for some dope workout clothing, some clothing that maybe you can just leave the house in or even just lounge around the house in, but you don't want to pay a king's ransom to look good or feel good, check out krathletics.com. There's clothing for men and women. So go ahead and pick you out a t-shirt, a hoodie, a crew neck, or some joggers. And before you check out, be sure to use the code DROPBALLS so that way you can get 15% off of your purchase. So again, the website is krathletics.com. And when you check out, use the code DROPBALLS to get 15% off. All right, so we back from that quick little break. And, you know, I wanted to go back to Courtney's question, the Courtney Harden's question about trading for Russell Wilson. And one of the things I wanted to say about that as well is when I look at, you know, potential trades and stuff, to me, what I ask the question is, does it move the needle? Like, does it move the needle much to where it automatically makes you a Super Bowl contender? And this is part of the reason why I don't want Russell Wilson to the Colts, because if you look at it, if I have to give up, so Colts just gave up a first rounder and a third rounder to the Philadelphia Eagles for Carson Wentz, right? And so that means we would have to potentially give up maybe 2 first rounders for Russell Wilson. And that's, I mean, personally, that's what I think he would be worth or what Seattle would be asking for. But for me, does he move the needle for the Indianapolis Colts? To where does he move it much to where, okay, at this point, if we get him, we're making a Super Bowl? Personally, I don't think so. But also so I don't think it's smart to leverage our future to get someone that I don't think moves the needle that much over what we already have at quarterback. Plus, it'll be our 5th quarterback in 5 years. But as far as for the Philadelphia Eagles, what I would say is ask the question, do you think Russell Wilson moves the needle that much to where you could package those 2 picks or package 2 first-round picks or whatever it is that it takes to get them? Because for one, he'll be in the NFC still. So do you think Seattle's going to be asking for a premium, especially if he's staying in the NFC? So we have to think about that as well. And so is it worth leveraging our future, or could we keep what we have and continue to build around it and see if that makes the situation better? And if that moves the needle more than getting a Russell Wilson in here. To be honest, I think if Aaron Rodgers came free and he was like, hey, I want to come to Philly, then yeah, you go in for Aaron Rodgers. Or same with the Colts, like you go in for Aaron Rodgers, because I think that moves the needle a lot more than adding a Russell Wilson to what you already have. So, I mean, that's just my opinion on that. But let me know what y'all think. Y'all can hit me up on Twitter about it, at DropBallsPod. Let me know what y'all think about that. All right, so the next question was from P Shark. His Twitter handle is the one underscore P Shark, and the one is DAONE. So be sure to go follow him. Also, he has a podcast, Let's Tighten Up. Y'all go check it out. Yes, it is a Titans podcast. So for all my Colts fans out there, you know how we feel about them Tennessee Titans. But anyway, it's still a dope podcast. Go check them out. Also on YouTube and everything too. So be sure to check it out. But he asked me, he said that he have quietly moved up to tie for the number one seed in the East. Do you think the team as currently constructed can win the East if fully healthy? I think a lot of things have to fall our way. I believe, yes, fully healthy, we could probably win the East. But it also depends on how Victor Oladipo comes back. If he comes back healthy and he can contribute, then I believe, yes, that helps move the needle for the Miami Heat. I like Yurtseven. As you could see, when Bam went out, when he was injured, Yurtseven stepped in, and that man was like a double-double machine, scoring and getting rebounds, even passing the ball. Like, he's been solid. So I like the team that we have currently, and Bam just came back. So if healthy, I think the Heat can make some noise, especially if they do not. Because I guess Jimmy Butler just got ejected out of the game tonight. But if they can just keep their composure, stay in games, they play really good defense, I think they can. I think they can. Now, it also depends on Brooklyn if they ended up doing something with whatever they end up doing with Kyrie Irving. You know, I think that helps too. So it just depends on what happens with all of that and how that falls into place. And I want to go to Tyler McGurk. He asked me a question as well. And also, he has a podcast. He has a pretty dope podcast that he does with some of his friends, Fatboy Fadeaway Podcast. Go check it out on YouTube. Check out their YouTube channel. But he asked me a question. He's a Niners fan. He asked me, how do I think the Niners can beat the Packers? And so when I look at this, as we know, the Green Bay Packers are not Aaron Rodgers, I should say, is 0-3 against the 49ers in the playoffs. So, you know, he already is going into this game behind the eight ball, in my opinion. But what they could do to beat Aaron Rodgers is to be sure, for one, they got to get Nick Bosa. Yeah, they got to get Nick Bosa back. They have to get him back, because I think that creates them being able to get pressure without blitzing. So you got to get Nick Bosa back, and you got to continue to be that physically dominant team that you all have been all season. And especially on offense. And the reason I say that is because, for one, what we know about the Green Bay Packers defense is they haven't been a very good run defense. Teams have been able to run on them. So with that being said, I believe that if you can continue to run on the Green Bay Packers, I think you will have success. Another thing they need to do is you need to convert when you get into the red zone. You cannot afford to just get 3 points. You can't afford to just get 3 points like they did against the Dallas Cowboys. They would go down, kick field goals, and that was pretty much it. You have to come away with at least 7 points. Now, I mean, 3 points, you can take 3 points here and there, but you don't want that to be the majority of your scoring, because you know Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, they're going to break out on offense at one point in time. So you got to be able to score when you get into the red zone. You got to be able to score touchdowns in the red zone. So if you do that, then I think you have a good chance of winning this game. Like I said, continue to run the ball, be physical, and you want to get pressure on Aaron Rodgers with four. Like, you don't need to blitz him in order to get pressure on him. Just get home, get to him with four, and I believe you all can win this game. And I'm gonna look up this stat, because I was looking at this earlier on Pro Football Focus. So when Aaron Rodgers was blitzed this season, he completed 67.1% of his passes when they were blitzing him. But when he was just under pressure, this doesn't necessarily mean being blitzed, but this means also being able to get there, you know, get him off a platform with four rushers. It doesn't necessarily mean blitzing, but out of 150 dropbacks, he only completed 43 passes. Well, I guess you could say it was 112 attempts and 43 completions. So he had a 38.4% completion percentage. He had 8 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, but that completion percentage, that 38.4, is bad. And one thing against the San Francisco 49ers this year, when they played the third game of the season, that was Aaron Rodgers' least amount of time to throw the ball while he was in the pocket. So on Pro Football Focus, they give you all these stats, but his total time to throw was 2.04 seconds when they were playing against San Francisco. So to me, being able to get pressure on Aaron Rodgers, I think helps a lot in order to win this game. Also, you do not want to one-on-one cover Davante Adams. As we saw in the last game, and really, I don't think you really want to play zone, because playing zone, Aaron Rodgers is probably going to pick you apart, just like he did in the last game, and especially that soft zone they played in the fourth quarter when Aaron Rodgers and them had to make that last, you know, that last drive. But you don't want to play that soft-ass zone. It's not going to work. But what you do want to do is at least bracket cover Davante Adams. You don't want to give him any free releases. You don't want to let him be one-on-one with your corners. That's not going to be good for you. It's not going to be good for you and your team if he's one-on-one with one of San Francisco's corners. Because as we know, their corners, they're all right, but they're not no world beaters. And Davante Adams being the best receiver in the NFL, you're going to have to figure out a way to stop him. He has a way of finding the zones. Him and Aaron Rodgers are on another level with their connection. So you gotta bracket cover him and force one of the other receivers to beat you. Valdez Scantling, Alan Lazard. You gotta find one of those other receivers and force Aaron Rodgers to throw to them to make them beat you. Don't let it be Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams, because otherwise you're gonna be in for a long night. So also when we look at that first game, that week 3 game, San Francisco versus the Packers. I mean, I guess when y'all blitzed him, you know, y'all were on his ass. He completed 55.6% of his passes when he was blitzed, had 1 touchdown, 0 interceptions. But, like, just under pressure against that team, he completed 75% of his passes while he was under pressure. But when he was blitzed, you saw the completion percentage drop. So maybe the 49ers will have to blitz him and play some coverage back, you know, back on the back end, some zone coverage. But you just want to make sure if you're going to blitz him, you got to get home. You don't want to give him that free – you don't want to take somebody out of coverage and give him a free area to throw the ball to. You got to make sure you get home if you're going to blitz Aaron Rodgers, because otherwise he's going to make you pay. So I think that's how you all will beat them, is just – being physical, getting home, getting pressure. Now, they do get David Bakhtiari back, so that's going to be hard coming off that left side. But we're going to see what happens. But I just think you got to get pressure on Aaron Rodgers, and you got to get home, be physical on offense. Oh, yeah, and do not let them put the ball in Jimmy Garoppolo's hands, because if they force you to throw the ball with Jimmy is going to make a mistake. And if you give Aaron Rodgers and the Packers a short field, he's going to make you pay. So y'all got to make sure that Jimmy has played good in some games, but he always gives you that one opportunity, just like he did against Dallas. He gave them about 2 opportunities to intercept the ball. They ended up picking off one. They didn't get the other one, but they ended up picking off one, got a short field, and they scored. So y'all got to make sure. Do not let them force you all to make Jimmy G the guy to make the plays. Y'all got to out-physical them and run the ball on them. You got to. So now, my boy, we got 2 more questions. 2 more questions. And these both come from Damian Adams at The Real Deal with DA on Twitter. Also, check out his podcast, every major podcast platform, The Real Deal with Damian Adams. I've been on there a few times. It's a dope podcast. All of these podcasts, these dudes that ask me questions, they have dope podcasts. So be sure to check them out. But he asked me, with KD being out 4 to 6 weeks, should the Nets start to apply pressure on Kyrie getting vaccinated? I don't think they should. Now, the reason I say that is because when you look at these 4 to 6 weeks, this time frame, they're playing about 19 games. 12 of those games are on the road. So Kyrie will be able to play. And so I'm my 46 weeks, I'm going from now into the end of February. So when I look at that, like I said, they're playing 19 games. 12 of those 19 are on the road. So Kyrie will be able to play in those games. Now seven, he won't be able to play in. But I'm not going to force him to get the vaccine. And P. Shark even piggybacked off of that. And he was like, well, continuation of that one, if you're the team, would you just ask them to pay the fine on it? Or if you're the team, would you just be, pay the fine for Kyrie playing in the home games? And I believe the fine is about $5,000. It would be $5,000 per game. So I think the first game is just a warning. The second one, I think, is $2,500. I got to go back and look at it, but I think the second game is like $2,500. And then anything over that, it's just $5,000, like $5,000 every game. So, I mean, they could do that, to be honest, because if the first one is just a warning, then that's already what I said. There's seven games that they play at home. So the first one is a warning, and then the second one is $2,500. Then you got five games where you're paying $5,000. What's that, $25,000? Why not? They got it. They can pay it. So, I mean, you could go that route too, but I'm not putting pressure on Kyrie to get vaccinated because we all know that that's not what he wants to do. So, nah, if I'm the organization, I don't put any pressure on it. They could easily just go 12-7 in that stretch. Or, you know, maybe James Harden will do something to win them a couple games at home too if they don't let Kyrie play in those games. So he also asked me, should the Cardinals look at moving on from Cliff Kingsbury? Now, you know, me and Damon have been on this thing about the Cardinals being frauds ever since last year. Last year, the Cardinals were my pick to make it to the Super Bowl. And they went, I believe 8-8, and they were on a roll. I think the first six games they were on a roll or something like that. And then after that bye week, they just fell flat, which is terrible. So, you know, this year, man, they were on a roll this year too. Like, they were balling. And then we just saw them against the Rams just get, you know, destroyed against the Rams. But this year they started off what, 7-0? And then they lost to the Packers. Then they beat the 49ers, lost to the Panthers. Then they lost to the Rams, to the Lions, to the Colts, and lost the last game to the Seahawks. So they finished this season poorly. You start off 7-0, and then you go, what is it? Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You lose 6 of the last 9 or last 10 games. Yeah, that's pretty bad. But I don't say fire Cliff Kingsbury this offseason. Give him one more year. They went, what, 11-6? Give him one more year. They made the playoffs. And because this next year is his contract year. So give him, let him prove it. Let him prove this year was not a fluke. And let him prove that he can make the adjustments to be better. We saw against the Rams, the whole team was just in over their heads. The Rams constantly attack Isaiah Simmons in the run game. Kyler Murray was not the Kyler Murray we saw at the beginning of the season. He looked very pedestrian. Cliff Kingsbury looked like he conceded the game after halftime, after the Rams went down and scored on that first touchdown drive, or on that first drive in halftime. And he just looked like he conceded the game after that. So I don't think you let him go now. Let him play out his last year of his contract, and if he doesn't improve, they don't make it deeper in the playoffs or whatever, then at that point you got to let him walk. You don't extend him, you just let him walk and you find a new coach, because he was supposed to be the guy that could bring Kyler Murray along. And every year we see Kyler Murray and we see this offense start off hot, and then every year after like the midway point or the bye week, we see them take a step back. So they got to figure that out. Let them figure it out. But they've gotten better every season. So, you know, I'm not going to be like fire Cliff Kingsbury. So, like I said, let them play out one more year. Let us see how it goes. And if he doesn't make any progress from these past 2 years, then you got to let him go. You got to just let him walk. Don't extend him and just let him walk. All right. So that ends all of the questions. They showed your boy some love today. They gave me all of the questions, and they showed your boy some love, and I definitely appreciate that. But now, let's get into these breakdowns. Well, these recaps of these games. I already gave you the recap pretty much of the Rams game. against the Arizona Cardinals that we had on Monday night. And the Rams just dominated. Odell Beckham looks like Odell Beckham. And I understand everybody's like, oh, he only had four catches for 55 yards. If that was good, then I don't know what to tell you. Man, you got to think about this, though. Like, Odell had, yes, he had four catches for about 54 yards and a touchdown. But the thing also is he had some catches called back due to holding or something, you know, something happening. Like, there was a holding call where he had, like, a 27-yard reception or catch and run and got 27 yards, but it was called back because of offensive holding on Wentworth on the offensive tackle. But he had, that was 27 yards. That would have put him at five receptions, 80-something yards. What, 81 yards? Yeah, 81 yards. Five receptions, 81 yards, and a touchdown. Not only that, you add a one-for-one on the pass. You was 100% passing or pass completion percentage through a pass for 40 yards to Cam Akers. And by the way, Cam Akers, man, that dude is crazy. Like, dude is amazing. I can't believe 6 months after tearing his Achilles, he is back playing meaningful football, getting 17 carries in a meaningful game in the playoffs. Not only that, but he had one reception for 40 yards and 17 carries for 55 yards. Like, hats off to his training staff, to his doctor, all of that. I've torn my Achilles. I didn't feel good. I didn't feel the same. Like, I mean, 6 months I was good, but I didn't feel like I could go play some meaningful football after 6 months. So, you know, shout out to him. Shout out to his training staff. Shout out to his doctor, all of that. Because the boy is a mutant. Bruh is a mutant. But anyway, so, but I dropped the, you know, I dropped the YouTube video before this game. Monday before this game, I dropped the YouTube video. And I said, Stafford has to protect the ball. They got to get Odell Beckham involved in the game plan. And they got to run the damn ball. They got to get home on Kyler Murray. Don't blitz him, but run the damn ball. And, you know, they did exactly what I said they should do. Matthew Stafford had a really good game, 13 for 17, 202 yards, two touchdowns. They made sure Odell Beckham was involved in the game plan. They ran the ball to the tune of 38 times and for 140 yards. They did what they needed to do. They got two sacks on Kyler Murray, and they balled. I mean, they did blitz Kyler Murray, and I will say this. When they blitzed him, it wasn't too good for them. When you go look at it, let me bring it up really quick. So when they blitzed Kyler Murray, like I said, they blitzed him. He was 7 for 11, 63.6% completion percentage. No touchdowns, but he had 38 yards. But, you know, that's better than when you look at anything else. When he wasn't blitzed, he was 12 for 23 for 52.2% completion percentage and two interceptions. Under pressure, he was 4 for 12, 33.3% completion percentage and one interception. So when he wasn't blitzed, but they got some pressure on him, he didn't do too good. But when he was blitzed, he was able to, you know, just drop back and throw some dimes. So, you know, they did what they needed to do to make sure to ensure that they won that game. And so that was good. The LA Rams, they looked really good. You saw Von Miller get involved. They looked really good. Like, they really looked good. Then you had the Kansas City Chiefs. And, man, I don't really want to really talk too much about this game because it's the Kansas City Chiefs versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, is this game really worth talking about? But I do want to give you all some information from this game that I looked up on Next Gen Stats. And you know, like, they really were able to do whatever they wanted to do against this Pittsburgh Steelers off or defense. Like, this is ridiculous. So the Chiefs had 269 of their 405 receiving yards after the catch. So that means these dudes were catching passes and just running. So half of those 400 or over half of those 405 yards were yak. Like, they were yak yards. So it's not even like, it's not even really like, you know, Patrick Mahomes got those yards. He threw them the ball, and they just did what they did after the catch. And then not only that, but Patrick Mahomes threw two touchdown passes when he was targeting vertical routes. So go route, corner route, a post, and a wheel route. And this was the first time that they were able to do that since week 12 of the 2020 season. So against Pittsburgh, the Chiefs were able to hit their stride and do what they normally do. You know, they love the deep ball. and they love getting players out there in space. They were able to do that against the Chiefs defense, or not against the Steelers defense, my bad. So, you know, I just wanted to give y'all some of that. Like, that's crazy. He was 4 for 5, 111 yards, and 2 touchdowns when he hit those deep vertical routes. So that's just crazy to me. But like I said, I didn't want to touch too much on that game because the Chiefs beat the Steelers. I mean, Steelers didn't even belong in that game. Then we had the 49ers and the Cowboys. And now, you know, I picked the 49ers to win this game because I said all they got to do is be more physical than the Dallas Cowboys. And that's exactly what they did from the opening drive. Jimmy Garoppolo protected the ball until I think it was like the fourth quarter. He threw that interception, or maybe it was the third quarter. I don't remember. But he threw an interception. And they really pretty much dominated the Dallas Cowboys the whole game. Offensively, Dallas couldn't get anything going. And defensively, the 49ers were really just having their way. That motion in the run game is a hell of a like that thing, man, it was killing Dallas. Deebo Samuel was doing his thing. Deebo had I don't think he led the team in rushing, but Deebo had 10 rushing attempts for 72 yards and a touchdown. Elijah Mitchell had 27 carries for 96 yards and a touchdown. They ran to the tune of 38 times for 169 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then you look at Dallas, they only ran the ball 21 times for 77 yards. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. And not only that, but Dallas, man. So they always say either you're allowing it to happen or you're coaching it. And Dallas, they have been a very undisciplined team this season, and it showed up in the playoff game. And now, you know, the flags were all warranted. They had 14 penalties, and the flags were all warranted. You had Randall Gregory, who in the fourth quarter, on the drive where I think there was like 8 minutes left, but this didn't happen with the 8 minutes left. But I'm saying like that, it was like 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. 49ers got the ball. It's a third down, I believe, maybe a second down. I don't know, something like that. But it was like 3rd and 10, 2nd and 10, something like that. You know, something like that. And Randall Gregory tackles the guy that is blocking him and then trying to move up to the second level. He grabs him and tackles him down to the ground, and they call defensive holding. Bro, you cannot do that in that moment in time. Mind you, Michael Parsons was already, you know, heading towards the ball carrier in Deebo Samuel. So there was really no reason for you to grab this dude and tackle him. And, I mean, you pretty much gave them a first down, and you let them continue to run the clock. Like, you can't do that. That's just not smart football. And so when we look at the time of possession, Dallas had the ball 26 minutes. The 49ers had it 33 minutes. And that's how you know they were running the ball, because they had a better time of possession. They were running the shit out the ball. And Dallas just couldn't do that. And then you add the penalties in from Dallas, and then you add in, like, the last play of the game, right? You see a lot of people pissed off about it and everything like that, but it is the rule that the umpire, whatever, has to touch the ball, has to spot the ball. You see it all the time. Larry Fitzgerald, when he was playing, he would go get it from whoever had the ball, like in those late game situations. He would sprint, grab the ball from him, run to the center, give the center the ball. The center would then turn around and hand it to the ref and let the ref spot the ball, and then they would get in position to go. But Dallas didn't do that. Dallas was getting back on the line just trying to snap the ball. And here comes the ref. And not only this, but people are asking this ref, who was about 50 years old, 60 years old, to do like a dead ass sprint, run a fofo, to, like, he's supposed to run as fast as those athletes out there on the field and go get the ball and spot the ball. Like, come on, that's not realistic. It's not realistic, especially when he's doing the job from the back of the play. He has to sit there and watch for holding on defense and offense. He has to watch for all of that, and then he can take off and run and go spot the ball. Not only that, what are you doing calling a QB draw with 14 seconds left? I get it. I get that you wanted to get into the, you know, get up closer so that way you could take some shots from like the 25 or something. I understand that. That's cool. I get it. But do you think the QB draw was the best play to call that, especially when the San Francisco 49ers were damn near giving you the whole middle of the field because they were not trying to allow you to do anything outside? That probably wasn't the smartest play call. And I mean, I get, okay, the middle of the field's open, I can run and, you know, get some yards. I would rather throw the ball because the ball travels faster than a person running. So now you're running the ball, you're taking up more time off the clock running the ball versus just throwing the ball downfield, like I said. the ball traveling through the air travels faster than someone carrying it. So not only that, Dak runs, gets 17 yards. Now, if Dak would have probably slid 10 yards, then you probably still have some time on the clock to get that play. But the fact that Dak ran a lot further from the judge or from the umpire, from the ref, he ran a lot further from him. And then you run 17 yards downfield versus 10. Like, let's say you go 10 yards. That probably saves you maybe that probably gives you maybe spiking the ball with 5 seconds left. And it still gives you a better chance to get the ball into the end zone from the 35 versus the 25 versus the 20 or whatever. Or not even the 25, my bad. Like maybe the 30 versus the 25. Like, I mean, it's a 5 yards difference, but it still gives you a better chance than where you were initially, which was like the 45 or something like that. So I think the play was stupid and I think it was poorly executed. I think that play, if they were going to run it, I think could have been executed a lot better. But that's how they ended the game, because they weren't able to spike the ball because of that run. But, you know, it is what it is. That they'll have to live with that. But also, you know, you can't blame the refs for that game. You shouldn't have been in that position. You were the highest scoring offense. You gained the most yards as an offense. You averaged the most yards per game as an offense. You were the most explosive offense. And yet you're in this slugfest with the 49ers, and you can only put up 17 points. So, no, like, the game shouldn't even been where it was at, and you shouldn't have been committing all of those penalties. Like, that's not the ref's fault that y'all are undisciplined and that your offense is good on paper but not a good product when you put it out there on the field. So, you know, that you got to look at that. You got to look at that. Anyway, now we had the Buccaneers and the Eagles. That was the day game. The Buccaneers versus the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, I thought because the Buccaneers were missing about 49% of their offense, no Chris Godwin, no Antonio Brown, no playoff Lenny, I thought they were going to struggle. But no, Tom Brady, you know, he went out there and did his thing on offense. The defense held their own. Like I spoke about a little bit earlier about how the Eagles, with Jalen Hurts, he was missing passes because he was either overthrowing, throwing too high, maybe a little bit late on some throws as well. But, you know, the Buccaneers handle business. Offensively and defensively, they handle business. But that secondary, boy, I tell you, that secondary, it's like 7-11. That motherfucker is always open. Excuse my language. But it's always open. Always open in that secondary. So if Jalen Hurts was a little bit better passer, Eagles would have had a chance. Eagles really would have had a chance if Jalen Hurts was just a little bit of a better passer. I did see some plays where he stepped up in the pocket, made some throws downfield. So I like what I saw from him. And that's progression. That's what I say. Like, we've seen Jalen Hurts progress. Earlier this year, he wasn't doing that. He was looking to take off. But as you've seen him progress, he's stepping up in the pocket to make those throws downfield when the pocket is, you know, collapsing behind him or whatever. So that has been growth from Jalen Hurts, and I like what I saw from him. Just got to get a little bit more accurate on those throws, and I think he will. Then we had the Buffalo Bills and the Patriots on Saturday, and Buffalo just dominated every aspect of that game. Josh Allen, they ran the ball, which was very surprising. They ran the ball 29 times for 174 yards. My, how the tides have changed. Like, they did what they played phenomenal football, offensively and defensively, held the Patriots to 17 yards, put up 47 points on the number 5 defense in the NFL. Not only that, but to go and score whenever you wanted to. They scored touchdowns on every single drive that they were trying to score touchdowns on, and they got a touchdown on them. Besides kneeling down the ball, that's the only time they didn't score. They didn't get a touchdown, kneeling the ball. The only time on offense they didn't get a touchdown. So, you know, that's a little bit crazy. Then we had the Bengals and the Raiders. And the Bengals and the Raiders, man, Joe Burrow was doing his thing. Derek Carr made some really good throws. But, you know, he made one throw to Darren Waller late in the game, driving downfield. That was just a dime. Like, it was just a dime. It was a magical throw. He put it low, like, Waller was running the seam, and he just put it low where only Waller could get it, but also where Waller couldn't get blown up by that safety that was coming down to hit him. It was an amazing throw. Like, he really made a great throw. But Cincinnati Bengals won that game 26-19. And the thing about the Cincinnati Bengals going into this next game against the Tennessee Titans is they may be going into this game not healthy. Apparently, four of their defensive linemen, including their best defensive lineman in Hendrickson, their leading sack, the leading sacker on their team, they may not be playing. They may not be playing this game against the Titans. And to me, I believe that bodes well for the Tennessee Titans. And I think that, yes, we're going right into my picks for next week or for this weekend. But I think that's good for the Tennessee Titans, especially with getting Derrick Henry back and getting everybody healthy on that team. That bye week was magical for the Titans. So they play in Tennessee. I got the Titans winning this game. I think they beat the Bengals. And I think it's because the Bengals are hurt. Like, they're just an injured group right now based off of that game that they just played against the Raiders. So I like the Titans in this game. Then we have the San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers. Now, I know I gave you all my whole spiel on how the 49ers can beat the Packers, but I think this is Aaron Rodgers' year, man. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to go out there, and he's going to do his thing. He's going to make it to another NFC championship, and I think they beat the San Francisco 49ers in Lambeau. I think that defense is going to do its thing. And I think that I forget the defensive coordinator's name, but I think he's going to be, instead of, you know, keeping a light box, I think he's going to try to force the 49ers to throw the ball. He's going to try to take away the run and force Jimmy Garoppolo to beat them. And I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo will be able to beat the Green Bay Packers. And not only that, the Packers get Jaire Alexander back. So that's another good addition back to that defense, where now you have all your corners healthy. You got Rasul Douglas that's playing good. Eric Stokes playing good. And like I said, I believe Jaire Alexander will be back for this game. He's questionable, so I believe he'll be back for this game. And I believe he will be the one following Deebo Samuel around. That's their best cover corner. So I believe he'll be the one following Deebo Samuel around and trying to take him away and get him out of the game. Then, you know, Devondre Campbell, Preston Smith, Kenny Clark. You have those, Rashawn Gary. Like, you have these guys that just make plays. Like I said, I think they're going to stack the box, and they're going to force Jimmy Garoppolo to try to win this game for the 49ers. And I like that game plan if the Packers end up doing that, and that's why I like the Packers in this game. We have the Rams versus the Buccaneers. I think as long as Matthew Stafford continues what he's doing, he's playing phenomenal football in the playoffs, in meaningful football. He's playing phenomenal. So, you know, that's kind of crazy to see. But I think, you know, you go to Florida, 60-degree weather. I think that's going to be very good for Matthew Stafford. And I think they end up winning this game against the Buccaneers. Like I said, that secondary is like 7-11. It's always open. So I think with Odell, with Cooper Kupp, with them boys, they're going to be able to exploit that secondary. And if you blitz Matthew Stafford has been playing phenomenal against the blitz this whole season. So, you know, that's one of the things they may not be able to do, because Matthew Stafford will get the ball out and get it to his receivers. Now, the Rams might not be able to get their running game going, but they should still stay committed to it. And I think that defense is going to play lights out. They're going to try to tee off on Tom Brady. Especially with Tristan Wirfs being questionable and may not be playing. Then you also have Ryan Jensen, who's also questionable and may not be playing this game either. So, you know, you just have those things where we saw what happened when those two, when Wirfs and Jensen went out. We saw that Philly created a lot of pressure, and it made it pretty hard for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. Now, I think if they're out, you got Aaron Donald. You got Von Miller, you got Leonard Floyd. Like, they can make some noise and get Tom Brady very uncomfortable in that pocket. I think some things going to happen for him. Then we got the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, this might be the best game, you know, of the divisional round. This might be the best game. I mean, all, like, you know, the 49ers, Packers are going to be a good game. Rams, Buccaneers are going to be a good game. But this one right here, this is, like, anticipated. And now the Bills, they played a much better team last week in the Patriots than the Chiefs played in the Steelers. And we saw what the Bills did to the Patriots. We saw what the Chiefs did to the Steelers. And this goes to answer my boy Eric's question, Epic Deadbird. This answers his question, where I think the Bills can recapture what they did last week. They can repeat what they did last week, because I think they're playing a worse defense than what they played last week. But I think the Chiefs will be able to score with them. I think the Bills will be able to score with the Chiefs. And I think it may come down to a final possession, but I think the Bills will win this game. This might be Josh Allen's time. This is his opportunity to seize the moment. And I think the Bills win this game against the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, I know one thing they will have to do, though, the Bills will need to limit the vertical passes downfield by the Chiefs. And how do you do that? You play a cover two shell, and you also got to make sure you tackle. So you play the two high safeties, and you got to make sure you tackle. I'm telling you, you cannot let these dudes make moves and get upfield. You can't do that. You got to be able to tackle Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, Travis Kelce. You got to be able to tackle those dudes. So if you don't, then it's going to be a long night for those DBs and that secondary for the Buffalo Bills. But I think, you know, you take away the deep passes, you take away the vertical threats, and you make Kansas City beat you by dinking and dunking. You make them beat you by that. And also, you gotta make sure Williams, you got to make sure you guard him as well, because he's been phenomenal in the passing game. He's been phenomenal in the passing game, Darrell Williams and you know, Jerick McKinnon. So, like, you have to make sure these dudes are not involved in these games. You got to make sure of it. And Jerick McKinnon, what, he had, I want to say, 142 yards rushing and receiving total or from scrimmage. He had 18 total touches, 142 yards, and a touchdown. So this is what I'm saying. Like, you have to guard their running backs. You got to guard their receivers. And you can't let them get downfield on you. You got to take away the vertical threats. But I think Buffalo is able to do that. I think their defense is really good. They were really good in the passing game. They did beat Kansas City earlier this season. And the defense, I want to say, is like third in passing, in the passing defense. And maybe like top 10 in rushing defense. So they have the pieces. They just got to make sure they recapture that magic they had last week. So, you know, those are my picks for this week. I'm going with the Rams. I'm going with the Buffalo Bills, going with the Titans, and I'm going with the Packers. And so those are my picks to make it to the championship games. And then, you know, next week I'll give you all my Super Bowl picks. But, you know, that's all I have for y'all, man. I hope you all enjoy. Be sure to follow your boy on Twitter at DropBallsPod. Check out the YouTube page, the YouTube channel, DropBalls Podcast on YouTube. The link is down in the description. Also, be sure to check out the DropBalls Podcast merch on Bonfire. That link is also down in the description. And until next time, y'all be easy. Peace. Oh, by the way, I forgot to say this. Happy New Year's, man. I didn't say this last week, and I forgot about it. Happy New Year's to y'all. Hope you all had a great New Year's. Hope you all had a great holiday season. But Happy New Year's. Here's the 2022. Hope it is a fruitful year for everybody. You know, I want to see everybody win, everybody grow, and I hope it's a fruitful year for everybody. But anyway, like I said, until next time, y'all be easy, man. Peace.